Welcome to the season 5 premiere of Game Misconduct. I'm CT here with Dory.
Hey.
Don't forget to follow us on all social media channels at Game Miz with a Z Conduct. I can't believe they've let us do this for five years. I say that every year.
I know. I think we said that season 2, like, oh my gosh, they're letting us do this again.
Season 5. That's one whole hand.
And we're back to an hour.
Yes, our shows this season. So if you couldn't get enough of us before, you'll be sick and tired of us by June. And we're super excited to be back on Lightning Power Play. It's only growing, and that's thanks to you guys for listening. We didn't quite get there last season, but guess what? Our roster didn't change much.
No.
We're still looking pretty.
We have some locks in place now.
We do have some locks in place.
In the organization.
So we're super excited to be here. Thanks to Matt Salmon and everybody at Lightning Power Play for putting up with us for 5 years. And I think we should just jump right in. What do you think?
Sounds good.
All right. Our first guest of the season is our good friend who we've never actually met in person, but I feel like, you know, we get along really well. Nick Elberga from NHL Radio Network. Hey, Nick, how you doing?
Fantastic. Always great to be on with you. And you have to uphold the mystery, right? We haven't met each other.
I know. It's kind of, secretive.
Exactly. No, it's perfect. I don't know about you guys. I'm really, really pumped up for another exciting season. And hopefully the Lightning could win it all this year.
Yeah, that's what I'm at least hoping. But we're going to get into that. We need to start off with where we were this summer. The signing of JT Miller and Ryan McDonough. You know, they got them at the trade deadline, and they decided to keep them. What did you think when you heard that?
Yeah, I like that. And, you know, even dating back to the trade deadline when they picked those guys up and they made that sort of blockbuster deal last minute with the New York Rangers, I like the value. Really going to miss P. Vierzeman, to be quite honest, with the GM. But I think when they made that deal, they had the intention of signing those guys up long term. It's still amazing to me how they're able to keep all these guys under the cap, and we'll see going forward what's in store with the likes of an Anton Stralman on the back end who's a UFA to be after this season. But I like JT Miller. I like that fit on the top line with Kucherov and Stamkos. And Ryan McDonough is the type of player that you need and want, especially in the Stanley Cup playoffs. He's a minutes eater in terms of penalty killing. And on the top pairing, you can put him with a Stralman. You can put him with a Victor Hedman. There's a lot of agility and mobility and leadership from that player, which you certainly need. But now, you know, it's at a point where I think the Lightning have to find a way to put it all together in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Ultimately, they fell short last year. But I have no gripes with that deal. I think they made it with a long-term and a short-term goal in mind. So I wasn't shocked. And I do like the number figures in both contracts.
All right. So talking about staying under the cap and all of that, Kucherov signing an 8-year deal kind of a little early from, you know, some talking heads saying that he could have probably waited a year and gotten a bigger, possibly, contract. What are your thoughts on that signing?
Yeah, I like the deal. Like, Nikita Kucherov's a guy who I think will never get the respect he deserves, and maybe it's because he's on a star-studded team that has the likes of Vasilevsky and Stamkos and Peyton Point and Hedman. I could keep going because there's a lot of talent on that roster, as you all know. I don't subscribe to that thought. I think the market value is there. He was going to be a restricted free agent and not an unrestricted free agent. There is a big-time difference with those two, so I think the money was there, and Steve Yzerman has that knack of getting these deals done and out of the way quickly. You know, you look at a variety of players before the Stamkos situation, he figured out, and, you know, and now it's up to the new leadership in charge, you know, and Julian Breezeball to figure those type of things out. But I think they're honestly in good hands, and I do like the Kucherov contract. I've been saying it for a long, long time. He's so underrated. And I still feel like he's scratching the surface of what he truly will be in like a year or two.
Do you think it's possible that we could have seen Kucherov sign somewhere else if this deal didn't get done now? Or do you think the Lightning probably were always going to be in control of that?
No, for the most part, pretty much in control of the player until, of course, he was at a point where he'd reach UFA status, which gives him the opportunity to go anywhere. As an RFA, Tampa still would have his rights. You know, looking at that situation, looking at the cap crunch that this team will always have, especially with the current nucleus in place, the whole Stamkos situation a couple of years ago. There was a bit of conversation that maybe they would have to trade a Kucherov, but I think a player of that ilk and how much he means to that team and how he's one of the best players in the league, it was more likely that there'd be other casualties. So I never got the sense that Kucherov was close to ever leaving Tampa Bay. I think it's a really good fit. And we've even seen in, you know, many pictures of his time there that he absolutely loves it. It really is an amazing market. Having had the chance to go out there for All-Star Weekend last year, I really got to see how much, in love that city is with hockey, with the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I think ideally as a professional athlete, there are no better places. There are minimally, I think, better places in the league that you'd want to play right now.
Yeah, I feel like Tampa, you know, you're able to come to a really great team in a city that really loves their hockey and their hockey players, but you're still able to have some level of anonymity and to be able to go out, you know, versus, you know, being a player like John Tavares in Toronto, where he probably can't leave his house.
We laugh, but it is a thing. You know, having had the opportunity, I was born in Montreal. That market is ridiculous with the French and English-speaking media. And now living near Toronto the way I have for the last 23-some-odd years, it's the same thing. Like, you can't go anywhere. Like, even a month and a half ago in the summer, I was at a skate in my hometown of Oakville, Ontario, and John Tavares was there, and there was still, like, a billion kids and a bunch of media. Like, you can't escape it. And that's one of the things you sign up for if you're a guy like John Tavares or if you're a player of that nature who signs a deal with a team, you know, the market's big and the media coverage is ridiculous. That's why I always wonder, you know, growing up, you know, if I were in the NHL, where I'd want to play. And I feel like, as you guys brought up, Tampa's just the perfect market, fantastic owner, great management, tremendous coaching staff, great players, a team that's always on the cusp the last several years of winning the Stanley Cups. It is an ideal situation, and I've always thought, like, that's the one place I'd want to play because I can walk down the street, go for a coffee, go for a billion drinks with friends, and nobody would bother me. You know, that's ideally, I think, as a pro athlete, what most guys would want. I do feel like there are guys out there who love the glitz and glamour, but I think it is a perfect destination. There's no doubt about that, plus the sales tax.
And you get to wear shorts and sandals all year round.
Yeah, like especially like here in Canada, it's starting to get a little chilly, and it's not going to be shorts weather, if you know what I'm saying.
We've had records highs of 90s, the last month.
More, thank you. Yeah,
yeah. So can we share a little bit of the love? You know, you get some of the warmth, we get some of the cool, because we're dying in the heat right now.
Yeah, it's a bit of a middle. I was in Miami 2 months ago. I was in Miami in July.
Oh, don't do that again.
One of my friends lives up there, so I had a good time, threw a bachelor party. It was a really good time, but just really, really humid. I can deal with humidity. Some people can't, but I would love to live in a place with that 24/7. I'm not a cold guy by any stretch.
Well, we'll switch. I'll take your job. You have mine. Okay. We'll do a little Freaky Friday switch a little bit.
I'm interested.
Okay. All right. So you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, Steve Yzerman, kind of shocking the hockey world, announcing he was going to step down and Julien Brisebois was going to take over day-to-day duties. Steve Yzerman staying on as a senior advisor. I was listening to NHL radio and it was the talk of the town. What were your thoughts when you heard that? And what do you think the outlook is?
Yeah, same as everyone else, like completely shocked. It came out of left field, and more so the timing. Like, that's the one thing I really wondered is why at that point in time did he decide to make that decision? You know, leads me to believe there were some things at home that he had to figure out. And, you know, you want to be close to your family and your kids. And that's the one thing I think the regret of many general managers and coaches and players is that you miss the key moments or majority of the key moments in the lives of your kids and your family and everything that goes along with that. And I'm sure there are many, many reasons. I think down the road we will see Steve Yzerman return to Detroit. I feel like it's inevitable, maybe in a year's time. I know Ken Holland, the current GM who's been there for a long, long time, just signed a 2-year extension, I believe. But I do feel like Steve Yzerman is in waiting and wants to return home. That's where his family lives. It all aligns. And again, on the other note, I think it was Julien Brisebois and the fact that we know the Montreal Canadiens are in turnover. He's in Quebec native. There's a real chance that team could be looking for a new general manager, we'll say, in the next couple of years. And Brisebois, you know, everybody seems to rave about this guy, and it's been a long, long time coming for him to finally get this opportunity. So I think it was sort of a bit of both, but I think it was also the organization saying, hey, we don't want to lose two guys in Yzerman and then Brisebois and then be caught in the cold with not a coat or anything. I mean, it was important to figure out that situation. It was just a weird timing thing. But I think, honestly, Yzerman said at the press conference he has left the organization in really, really good hands. So we'll see what happens going forward.
So do you think – so he's still staying on as a senior advisor. So
yeah.
Do you think we're going to lose our Jedi mind tricks that he pulls on other GMs where we get the best end of a deal? Because I feel like when a GM sees that Steve Yzerman is calling, he will always take that call. Do you think we're going to lose some of that, or you think maybe the trust and it's kind of transferred over to Julian?
Well, it really is interesting, the perception of what goes on behind the scenes. I think ultimately the general manager has the final decision. If a team has a president, sure, they're in the decision-making process. But I think the one thing we don't realize is that a variety of casting characters are involved in decision-making processes, from, you know, drafting a player to trading for a player. And that's why I think Julian Brisebois and the work he's done in sort of scouting and you know, looking after cap situations and all that fun stuff the last several years can't go unnoted. In terms of the Jedi tricks, you know, that's my real wonder, is the ideology different from one person to another? And you would have to think it is. And maybe the Lightning in the past weren't interested in some players, and maybe Brisebois looks at those players now and says, you know, we're definitely interested. So that's the one thing, and I think we'll see as time goes on here, and Tampa has to make moves even leading up to the trade deadline. Brisebois and the difference he has in ideology as opposed to Steve Yzerman, because, there are a variety of moves. You're like, how in the world did that happen? And Yzerman was really, really strong at that, good at that. And, you know, getting back to Yzerman, too, I think part of his legacy, he would love to go to Detroit and try to win a Stanley Cup there as a player and an executive. I mean, that would be just a marvelous feat. So, while it's early to tell if that is the case and Yzerman does go back home to manage or be a part of that Detroit Red Wings organization, again, they are in really good hands with Julian Brisebois, and we'll see if he can pull the same tricks that Yzerman pulled.
I mean, you would have to think that he worked under Steve Yzerman, for 8 years. I want to say after Yzerman was hired, it was within 2 months that Brisebois got the phone call and left Montreal, the Canadian organization, to come be the assistant here. So I don't know how much, and I've said this to people more privately, I think, than on social media, because I've learned my lesson, don't argue on social media. But I don't think it's going to be that stark of a difference. I think there may be things he wants to do differently, maybe being, you know, coming from a business background, not a playing background. Some things may be a little different, but I don't know. I'm not sure how much the whole ideology, like you said, like, you know, how, we'll have to see how it all changes. But right now, from where we're sitting, I don't see it really changing. I don't see it like becoming a 180 type of thing.
Yeah, I don't expect much of a difference. There's a reason why Steve Yzerman brought the guy in. There's a reason why he kept him around for a long time. And I'm sure internally felt like he was his successor to begin with. Ideally, if he had these feelings going forward about going in another organization, whether it be maybe a Seattle team in 2 years' time or Detroit or somewhere else to be closer to home, I'm sure this ran through the head of Steve Yzerman. So I'm sure, you know, Brisebois has learned a lot of tricks. I do like when guys get the opportunity. Another prime example would be somebody who was with David Poile in Nashville for a long, long time, almost spanning two decades, and that's Paul Fenton, who's now with the Minnesota Wild. Very similar to Brisebois, getting his opportunity after, you know, a lot of tutelage and a lot of leadership over the last several years from two of the best hockey men out there. So I don't, you know, to answer the question and to feed off your comment, I don't expect much of a difference, maybe a tinker in ideology, but for the most part, the nucleus is the same for this organization. They still have a boatload of prospects, and they're going to be a contender for many years to come.
All right, we're speaking with Nick Alberga from NHL Radio Network. We're going to take a quick break and come back with more. We're back with more Game Misconduct, and our guest, Nick Alberga, all the way from Canada, calling in. I love it. So we kind of talked about what happened during the offseason, all the, you know, signings and the whole Steve Yzerman news. And now let's look at what we have ahead of us, the outlook for the Lightning. What do you think about this year's team? I mean, not a lot has changed from last year.
It has not. I think they're really good. Does that suffice as an answer? No.
can you elaborate a little bit? Pontificate a little bit more, please.
Well, it's like Tampa's. I put a select amount of teams in the NHL. Tampa will be in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Said team will be in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's what they do that sort of cements their yearly legacy in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I think we're at a point in time now where it's time to win. Last year, I felt like they had the team to win, and clearly they could not put it together, and they fell to Washington. The more discouraging part was the way they lost to Washington. Tampa's been one of the better, higher-scoring teams in the league, and the way they were shut out in games 6 and 7. Like, I was at a point where I was about to book my flight to Tampa, and then luckily I didn't, and I waited, and then obviously I ended up in Vegas for game 1 and 2, but I was so close to booking, I thought it was over, and then they got shut out in back-to-back games, which doesn't happen very frequently. So I think it's a team that has to, like, I think they're going to be one of the best in the league in the regular season. They'll be contending for the President's Trophy, for most points in the league. They have a really, really strong home record. It's more so, can they find a way to get over that hump in the Stanley Cup playoffs? Because it's sort of intriguing, all the conversation around Alex Ovechkin. Could he finally win the Stanley Cup? Could he finally get over that hurdle? Well, we're at a point in time now with Steven Stamkos is the next one, it seems, where he's taking and facing a lot of ridicule for his inabilities to get the job done in the playoffs. So I think Tampa's at a point, I wouldn't say they're at a pinnacle, an apex of what this team truly can be, but the situation will get harder and harder as the years go by with the caliber of players they have. So it's integral they find a way, and it's so difficult to win the Stanley Cup, as you both know. But that's the one thing I'm curious to see is, can Tampa finally figure it out in the Stanley Cup playoffs? Because they're in a really, really difficult division. And, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs picked up John Tavares up the middle. They're sitting pretty. There's a lot of talent on that roster. Whether you guys admit it or not, the Florida Panthers are also a really, really good team.
Boo, hiss, yeah, boo.
Exactly. I was waiting for that. And then the Boston Bruins, the team from last year, so that you guys beat in the second round. So there are a lot of hurdles to get to the end game, but that's the big thing for me is I'm thinking big picture, can they finally win the Stanley Cup?
So we haven't spoken since the wrap of the season. So what do you think it was against Washington that they really need to figure out? Was it the size? Was it, you know, I don't think it was the speed. What was your take on that series?
It was pretty simple. They couldn't deal with Washington's traps, Barry Trotz. Like, there's a reason why that guy is a future Hall of Fame head coach. There's a reason why the Islanders spent, what, $5 million to get him out of Washington. He was a free agent after winning the Stanley Cup, which is a rarity in the sporting world. They played the trap to a T, and by trap, mean they closed all the lanes, and Tampa is a team most effective when using their speed and their passing game, and they were not able to establish that at all. Like, it was so shocking to me the way they were just completely shut down for the most part in that series. And again, to reiterate what I said in the previous answer, is they're widely known as one of the best teams, if not the top team offensively in the NHL, 1 through 12 up front and 1 through 6 in the back end. And the fact that the Capitals were able to once go into their arena at Amalie Arena and once do it at home, beat them in shutout fashion, I think was really, really impressive. And part of it was, I think, tipping your cap and, you know, acknowledging the Washington Capitals for being very stifling defensively, but also on top of that, it was Tampa's inability to get over that hurdle and you know, bear down and do it when it mattered most. So certainly a long summer for a majority of that roster. You'd have to think, contemplating, thinking about what went wrong. They were so close. They were one win away and then couldn't get the job done. That has to sting big time.
I also think, and I hope nobody gets mad at me and
it's all right, we've gotten over that.
Gets mad at me for saying this, but I really think that Ovechkin played his tail off, and it was a different Ovechkin. It was a complete Ovechkin. It was almost like we've never seen this guy. Not that guy. You know, he wasn't afraid to play gritty. He wasn't afraid to go after the. I mean, it wasn't just that gorgeous shot. It was more of a total complete player. And it was almost, and I don't want to say, because this is just speculating, I'm just saying from what I saw watching it, obviously I don't know, it was almost like the Lightning weren't expecting that Ovechkin to show up.
No, and nobody was. And I'll be honest, like, Ovechkin this summer put my partying in college to shame.
Oh my goodness. The Instagram was just glorious.
Yeah, and he had a kid too. Like, he was on top of the world. Like,
yeah.
He really, really impressed me, because I'll be, you know, the first to be honest and preface by saying I wasn't the biggest Alex Ovechkin supporter.
Oh, CT can't stand him. That's why I was waiting for her to throw something at me.
That's why we get along so well, Nick.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I wasn't the biggest fan, but he finally got over that hump. And, you know, it's fair to realize, too, like, Steve Yzerman, I believe, took 13 years before he won his first Stanley Cup. It does take a while, and eventually everything clicks and it comes together. I felt like Ovechkin, and maybe that's the similarity and the difference between Steven Stamkos and the issues he's had in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It just seemed like every big-time goal that the Capitals scored in the playoffs, it seemed to stem, whether it was off the stick of Ovechkin, it was off a play from Ovechkin, it was off a check from Ovechkin. And that's exactly what you need in sort of a DNA and a recipe for success in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Just look at the Pittsburgh Penguins in the two previous years. You know, going back, Chicago, their three cups in 6 years. The LA Kings, their two cups in about 5 years. So there needs to be that important ingredient. Like, you're not winning anything, I think, without your top player being one of your best players. And that's exactly what the Capitals got. Truthfully, I was very happy for the guy because I've been one of the biggest naysayers in his career. And that was the one thing eluding him was that Stanley Cup. So all the power to him. But I just love society. The guy wins the cup. He parties like a rock star, and people are talking about how he's like partying like he's a frat boy. I had no issue with it at all. He worked his tail off to get there, so I'm happy for the guy.
I'm just happy that we can stop asking the question. So when is Alex Ovechkin going to win the cup?
Well, that's the issue now. You cover the Lightning, it's going to be about Stamkos, right?
I know, and you know, I heard it might have been Scott Laughlin on NHL, or it might have been wrong, but he kind of, you know, said, you know, well, now Alex Ovechkin has his cup, so now the best player in the league not to have a cup yet is Steven Stamkos. And I'm like, oh, come on, give the guy, like, I'm not one to give anybody breaks, but, like, he's been injured a lot. There have been things that have been out of his control. I mean, I think that's a little, why do we need to replace that one player?
Right.
Because we're the media.
I know. Damn us media people. All right. So you kind of alluded to it earlier about the teams to really watch for in the division. You've got Toronto with the Tavares pickup, which was huge.
Also, and I want to add that I really think that this is, she's giving me the look, Nick. You may like this, but she won't. I think this is the year that it finally comes together for them.
For who?
Toronto.
Oh, come on. It's our year. Darn it.
I know. But I mean, come together. At least I think they're finally going to, you know, the fruits of their labor.
Are going to show.
All of that building years. I think this is it.
Is that the feeling in Toronto, Nick?
You would think. Like, it's funny that you're doing a show on the Tampa Bay Lightning IR channel and you're picking Toronto because they'd have to go through Tampa. You realize that.
No, yeah, I know. She's going to get it later. It's fine.
No, it's fair. I think everybody is entitled to their opinion. I'm with you. Like, I think the Leafs are a really, really good team. Yeah, it's really desensitized me working in the media for, like, the last 12, 13 years and that Toronto's my team, but I'm realistic. I'm not sure I could stack them up with Tampa just yet. I think maybe depth-wise up front they're there. Maybe you can make that comparison goaltending-wise of Vasilevsky and Frederik Andersen. But I think where Tampa certainly has Toronto is on the back end. You know, Victor Hedman's an absolute stud, one of the best defensemen in the world. Ryan McDonough's still a top 20 defenseman. Anton Stralman's a really good defenseman. Mikhail Sergachev. Toronto's got the likes of a Morgan Riley, a Jake Gardner who's on a contract here. They got very steady players, but they don't have like that wild card X factor type Victor Hedman style type guy. So I think until they get somebody closer to that ilk, and maybe it's one of these prospects that they've drafted in the last couple of years, and Timothy Liljegren or Rasmus Sandin, both respective first round picks, maybe they come to fruition. I can't put the Leafs in that conversation just yet. I do feel like the Tavares pickup has, you know, put the pendulum closer to the Boston Bruins and then closer subsequently to the Tampa Bay Lightning. But I do feel like Tampa is still the team to beat, not only in the division, but in the conference. I do feel highly about them.
Okay, Nick, you can still be our friend. Okay. So you kind of listed, you know, our defensive players. Is, you know, last 2 years ago, it was really Braden Point. Even last year, it was Braden Point. People were really looking at Vasilevsky last year because it was his first full season as at number one. Is there any player in your mind that we should really be keeping an eye on that maybe may have their year?
That's really the question. I think our guy, Yanni Hockey, I like to call him, Yanni George. came out of nowhere. I love to call him Yanni Hockey, by the way. It just rolls off the tongue like Johnny Gaudreau in Calgary. A guy I'm curious to see what happens, and they just picked him up from Philadelphia the other day on waivers, is Danick Martell.
Mm-hmm.
This team has had success the last several years of sort of grooming guys unheard of, 23, 24, 25, and turning them into really solid National Hockey Leaguers. John Cooper has this ability to turn everything into gold for some reason. So I wouldn't be, you know, surprised at all if a Martell really took off this year. A Matthew Joseph's another player who is scratching and clawing to try to make this roster. I would expect an Anthony Cirelli to take another step in the right direction. There really is an embarrassment of riches, and I'm not just saying that because I do work for the Lightning organization, but I do feel like it really is an embarrassment of riches in terms of depth up front, what they have on the back end, and goaltending-wise, too, with Andrei Vasilevskiy. So I think ultimately it comes down to, can they get those 16 victories again in the Stanley Cup playoffs? That's what's going to decide matters for me.
Go ahead.
Real quick on the Sergachev.
Sergachev? Yes.
Sergachev point. Do you think that, what do you think we're going to see from him? Because, and let me explain why. He's very young. I don't think anybody was expecting him to come out the way he did. As, you know, a teenager. Is that something you think was like a flash in a pan? Or do you think that was honestly just foreshadowing of what's to come from him?
No, I think he's going to be a brilliant player. Like, there's a reason why Montreal took him really high in the entry draft a couple of years back. And, you know, that's taking nothing away from Jonathan Drouin. I think he's going to go off to have a really good career. But the fact of how that scenario played out, that Steve Yzerman was still able to find a way to get a first-round pick and a Sergachev on the back end back in that deal, you had to make that deal. Because a lot of people, when talking about that trade, were like, well, you already have sort of an embarrassment of riches. You're just adding to your depth in the back end. That being said, with Sergachev, I do feel, I wouldn't say that having a headman or somebody else would hinder his progression, but I'm curious to see how they handle that situation going forward. I do believe Braden Coburn's another guy who's an unrestricted free agent after this season, coupled with Anton Stralman. I wonder if they let one or two of those guys go and evolve Sergachev into an upper role. He shoots the same, you know, way and left as a headman. I think you have the ability to learn a lot from a Victor Hedman, even the guys you just mentioned, especially an Anton Stralman, who I think is a very under-the-radar, underrated player, has been for a long time in the NHL. But certainly I think Sergachev has the ability, the talent already, to be a tremendous defenseman, and having the opportunity to learn under a John Cooper and to learn under a Victor Hedman the way he can for the next several years is only going to help his progression. I don't feel like he was a flash in the pan. I think it's fair to be reasonable with the expectations for Sergachev this season. I do think it gets tougher for defensemen in the second year of their NHL careers, and I do think the mistakes and the mishaps will continue. It's part of grooming. It's part of the maturation of a player. But ultimately, Tampa knows this. The league knows this. They have something really, really good in Sergachev that will turn over into a long-term contract one day. It's a great asset to have if you ever want to explore in the trade market, too. So they've got to be through the moon with the way he's played so far as a member of the Lightning.
I agree, yeah. And that's kind of, I'm going to make a segue here. The Erik Karlsson sweepstakes didn't necessarily go in our favor. And since you do cover, you know, the league nationally, I kind of wanted to get your take on where he ended up in San Jose.
Well, I'll start this by saying that Karlsson is 1 year away from going to market. By going to market, it means being an unrestricted free agent and, again, dictating where you want to play. And I'll say that, too, because my feeling is that he wants to play in Tampa. I think he's really, really good friends with Victor Hedman. I just think he loves everything that market would bring. Very successful, everything we've lamented throughout this interview. Strong ownership, great coaching, a lot of depth. But I think the big-time issue, Tampa had everything, every piece to make a trade for Erik Karlsson. Is the issue was salary cap. And, you know, this team is in a cap crunch on a yearly basis. We love Ryan Callahan. You got to love what he brings to a team. He makes a lot of money, and you're not getting enough, I think. And to be critical, I think, is fair of that contract. They would love to get rid of that contract, but hopefully he has a bounce-back season, and maybe he makes it able to deal that contract in the long term. But I think that was the big-time issue. They had the prospects. They had the picks to get a deal done, and maybe the best deal done with Ottawa. It was just more so how could you know, Tampa justify making that deal, A, and B, how could they make it work long term? And maybe they revisit that situation in a year time around July 1st if he gets to market. We know he's ended up with the San Jose Sharks, and maybe they blow his doors off. Another really, really cool place, I would think, to live and play hockey. You can't go wrong with California. So something certainly to monitor, but I don't think it was for a lack of trying. I'm sure they tried their hardest to make something work, but I think it involved way too many optics, which included moving a contract out of town. And sometimes it's the best move. The best moves are the ones you don't make. So maybe that's the silver lining in this situation.
I agree. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, we were talking about this again on the next offseason about where is he going to end up. All right, so we're going to take another quick break and be back with more Game Misconduct. We're back with more Game Misconduct with our friend Nick Alberga from NHL Network Radio. So, all right, Nick, you're Mr. Fantasy Hockey. I know nothing about fantasy, and I know I told you I was going to try to learn a little bit last season, but things got a little busy. So if somebody is maybe dipping their toe into the fantasy hockey world, let's do a fantasy hockey for dummies. What do you got?
Yeah, let's do it. I guess I didn't do my job well enough if you didn't learn anything.
Well, it's not that I didn't learn anything from you talking about it last season. I just didn't, you know, dive in a little deeper.
Just got to listen to the show, I guess, more frequently. It's
I know. I'm going to put a reminder in my phone right now. I won't miss won't miss an episode. So kind of, you know, dumb it down for us a little bit.
Yeah. So I do a show called The Fantasy Forecast. We'll get to that later on. In terms of fantasy hockey, it's just that. It's clearly something where you comprise a team, you do a draft, you can do long-term, short-term, and by that I mean a one-year or a multiple-year, which is called a keeper league. You know, to keep it pretty standard and basic, it just, you draft a roster, you could have up to 6 teams, you could have 8 teams, you could have 10 teams, and you draft a roster of players, and there's a tabulation with numbers of a variety of categories. You can have any categories you want, from goals and assists to points to plus minus to penalty minutes to hits, really anything you want in the NHL game you can have as part of your fantasy tabulation. And then you can either do a head-to-head league where you play a new opponent every week, and then you figure out point system, and then you play in a playoffs at the end of the year. Or you can have something called rotisserie, where it's a tabulation on a daily basis, and it goes right through until the end of the season, and the person with the most points and the most tabulated point would win the league. So it's really, really fun. You know, the reason why I like fantasy hockey is that it adds a unique perspective. When you're watching a game, especially if you're a fan of the league like I am, and you watch every team, let's say it's a boring hockey game and you've got a player or a couple players playing in that game, it adds a bit of spice and intrigue to that game. So I encourage a lot of people, if you're a fan of hockey and fan of the Lightning, go out there and have some fun. You know, you could put money on it. You can just play for fun. There are so many leagues out there.
Do you have like 6 televisions in your family room where you've got like all of NHL Center Ice every game playing?
It really is difficult because on NHL Network Radio, I do a show for the most part called Ice Cap, and I sort of have to recap, and not to give away too much, but I don't watch all the games.
Oh, yeah.
No. I know. That's a big-time radio thing right there. No, but what you do is, like, you recap, you watch a lot of highlights, you watch the Coles notes, you watch a lot of action, don't get me wrong, but there's only, you know, one set of eyes to flip through. You can flip through the channel at intermission. Like, a lot goes into it. So it really, really is fun, but you have to monitor and stay on top of that situation.
So with the daily thing, how does that work? Because that seems
time-consuming?
Yeah, because I used to play fantasy football, and I struggled enough with that. So how do you change is there a schedule where you can say, like, on Tuesday I'm going to take this guy, or do you have to every single day change your lineup?
Well, okay, so there's daily fantasy hockey, which you often see, and you can put money down. It's like a salary cap thing, and you pick players on a daily basis. You see what games are happening, and you try to fit them under a cap. You can play that. I'm talking more so like an ESPN league or a Yahoo, which I'm a big endorser of. Yahoo Fantasy Sports is phenomenal, as most of the listeners know. And basically, you know, the way it's encrypted on the screen is that you see when your player is playing, you see who they're playing, and then you form your roster from that. Different leagues will have different roster setups. You know, you can have a league where you know, most standard leagues have two centers, two left wingers, two right wingers, and three defensemen, we'll say, for sake of argument. And, you know, you look at your players and, you know, if you're able to put those guys in the roster, you put them on, and then daily you switch it up. You move guys who are not playing out and you put new guys in, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely.
No, it does make sense. I'm just like, I was like blown away. Like, whoa, yeah. That's commitment.
I get it.
So with you, when you do fantasy, are there any stats that, because, you know, you go to games and they give you these really thick stat, I don't even know what to call them. Like
stat
these
books.
Stat books type of, you know, where they tell you every player's plus minus and every player's, you know, play on ice. All these things they keep track of. Are there any... Because you're such, you know, a fantasy expert. Are there any that you're like, I don't even know why this is,
like, or like is, are there, track of these? Is there one or two stats that you really need to focus on and forget the rest?
Well, I'll answer the question this way. I get this question a lot. I think what you're asking me basically is like, how do I tabulate? How do I project how a player is going to play or the input offensively that they're going to get? And I think there are a variety of things, and I will go over this in the next couple of weeks as I get, you know, listeners set for another fantasy season, is, you know, to have projections, to monitor situations. We've talked a lot during this very lengthy interview, by the way, about, you know, off-season movement. That was a little jab there.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not sure how to take that, Nick.
I'm having the most fun in the world. So we've talked about off-season movement. I think fantasy owners want to monitor what happens around the league. I think it's important to note when a guy is playing for motivation of money, and by that I mean a contract year. You look at an Erik Karlsson, you know, those type of players, you know what you're going to get on a yearly basis, but I think it's important to know when a guy, his contract is going to be ending, storylines, anything involved in that, returning to a former place to play a game, all motivation, anything that upper edge you can have on an opponent, I think is integral. You've got to sort of analyze your situation, cater to the categories of your league. If there's hits, then clearly you want guys like everyone's favorite Alex Ovechkin or Nikita Zadorov on the back end for Colorado, was the hits leader by a landslide last year. So you want to be very smart. And there are beginner leagues. I know this sounds really, really complex, and maybe it's because I live and breathe this fantasy stuff, but there are beginner leagues, so you don't have to worry too much. I would, alert people out there just to get in some beginner leagues and see how it works out before you really expand.
Well, Nick, that's some very good advice. And, you know, we don't want to keep you too much longer. So remind
in our lengthy interview.
Remind everyone.
I'm the same co-host of this show.
Remind everybody where they can hear you again, everywhere, and your Twitter, where they can see you on Twitter.
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at The Golden Muzzy. I'm a huge smartass, by the way, on social media, which is phenomenal for viewership. I'm on a variety of different channels. I do Off the Rush, it's a weekend program, and a nighttime program entitled Ice Cap on Sirius XM NHL Network Radio. I'm also coming back for season 2 on Saturday nights on the Sportsnet Radio Network here in Canada. I'm doing the same thing I do on NHL Network Radio, which is sort of a recap show, but it's sort of best part of Hockey Night in Canada, so the listenership is really, really good, and that's called Hockey Central Saturday. And I also took on a new gig a couple weeks ago. I'll be the fantasy guru, or whatever you want to call me, for Sportsnet, which is
really, really big
up here in Canada. I'm sure a lot of Americans and listeners know what Sportsnet is. They paid a lot of money for the rights to hockey a couple years back, so very exciting times, but also sort of dreading the start of a season because it means no more playtime for Nick Alberga.
Yeah, you're going to be busy. And remind everybody where they can hear you on Lightning Power Play.
Yep, so I'm switching it up a bit. Last year, my shows aired on Mondays and so on and so forth. This year, they'll be airing starting on Saturdays. And I look forward to another season again. I'll be throwing names and, you know, analyzing trends and themes, everything that's happened. And you can also read my work on sportsnet.ca. I'll have all angles covered for you all.
So you don't sleep. We get it. Okay.
No, and, I go to bed at like 4 a.m. all
oh
the time.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm kind of sad they moved you, because we've always been on Mondays, and we had you on Mondays. So when Lightning Radio would, you know, tweet their lineup, they would say, you know, Game Misconduct and
Nick Alberga
and at Golden Muzzy.
At Golden Muzzy.
And I'd get so excited because you would retweet it. And I'm like, he's super famous, and people are going to see.
Well,
I'm on the radio, nobody can tell my face, you know?
That's why we have social media now.
Exactly.
We can't hide anymore. Well, Nick, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And we hope that you get down here to Florida, not in Miami, but to Tampa to hang out so we can buy a couple beers and just talk more hockey.
Can't go wrong with alcohol. It's always been a blast being on with you guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Nick.
We love having Nick on. He's always so much fun.
He is so much fun.
So let's kind of do a quick recap of our summer.
Okay.
How do you feel about that? Good summer?
It was a good summer.
Yeah.
But I was, you know.
You wish we had gone all the way. It was tough. I did not watch the finals.
I didn't either.
I couldn't.
I didn't. We're going on our, you know, this is our fifth season.
Oh my goodness.
This is our fifth season. So anybody that listens knows I'm kind of like, you know, kind of like the one that like puts things in perspective a little bit. And, you know,
I'm the one who freaks out.
I was like, meh. I literally, and I think we were on the phone and I was like, nah, I don't even care about the Stanley Cup final. I mean, I was like such a baby about it. And I was just like, it was so.
It hurt.
It hurt. It was so disappointing. It was just like, I don't care. I don't care anymore.
I couldn't watch it, but I have watched clips back of the series. And it was quite a series with Vegas and Washington. I mean, who would have thought at the beginning of the season that Vegas would have been there?
Nope.
Their inaugural season, they're in the finals playing Alex Ovechkin and the Capitals, and they did a great job.
They did. And I'm really, really interested to see what they do this season.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, is it
sophomore slump time?
Right. Or are they going to come back roaring again?
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see, for sure. Oh. But I'm actually going to Vegas in October. To see the Lightning play Vegas.
You are.
And I'm going to catch the Vancouver-Vegas game, too.
Yeah.
So if anybody's going out there for the Lightning-Vegas game, let me know. I'll be there. I'm going to be there for like 5 days.
Oh, my goodness. That's a long time to be in Vegas.
Yeah, we're doing the Vegas-Vancouver game. Then there's a day off. Then we have the Lightning-Vegas game. And then I'm going to see the Backstreet Boys.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Don't judge me.
Okay.
And then we're flying back.
For the second time.
For the Jeez, they didn't even know that part.
I think you already like.
Oh, did I already let people know?
You already
anyway,
told.
So it. I'm super excited because it'll. I'm really excited to see what they do there.
I would love. I've always said I wanted to go to a game in Nashville, and
there,
I know you've
it's
done
amazing.
That. You've always told me like, no, it is.
It's
super
awesome.
Cool. And Vegas is kind of the thing where I don't care about gambling and drinking and whatever they do out there.
Yeah,
but I just think it seems like a cool.
I mean, it's like
vibe.
Cirque du Soleil meets a hockey game.
The
beginning of the games where they do all the pomp and circumstance. I mean, it was very Vegas. So I can't wait to see it.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
Well, and the Lightning kind of really did. We had a whole thing about it a couple years ago that the Lightning really set such a standard.
Absolutely.
Of
game presentation
and everything. And then people probably have I don't know, season three. I think we talked about it. We got a tour. We talked to the Lightning Vision people, and they were, you know, saying that there was a time when people came to Tampa
to see
to
what
the
we
Lightning
were doing.
Game. People from you know, different teams and NBA teams and other NHL teams, because they wanted to know, okay, what is this buzz? What are you guys doing? Mm-hmm. And we're just blown away. So, you know, the Lightning kind of, I think maybe not fully, but I think they kind of started that modern new hockey, you know, way of looking at it. Like we're going to give you, and
it's
listen,
a show.
It's the great, it's a show.
Yeah.
And I think other teams have
glommed onto that. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I would love to do Vegas, and I would love to do Nash Vegas.
Nash Vegas and Vegas.
Just to kind of, because I feel like they're very, it's kind of like the same vibe as the Lightning. Like, we're little guys.
Well, they're kind of non-traditional hockey markets. Yeah. You know, people still throw that term around, even though we've got one of the best teams in the league for like the fourth year running.
And let's be honest, last year, they were the two best teams in the West, correct?
Yeah.
And the year before that, when the National Predators were the best team in the West. So, I mean,
I'll be taking lots of
glass ceilings.
Yeah, I'll be taking lots of photos and sharing that with everybody because I'm super excited for it.
I would be.
So I got a new job.
I don't know if you're allowed to talk about that.
That's all right. I could just say I got a new job.
Okay.
So, got a new job. So, that was fun.
That was exciting.
Yeah. So, my summer's been fun. it's been an adventure.
One thing I did want to talk about that I think is really neat, and I don't I'm trying to. I was like wrecking my brain the last few days. Like, I wonder if I can get in. I don't think so.
I'll just turn your mic off if you.
No. There's a really cool YouTube channel that I'm addicted to called Fact Fiend.
Okay.
And the guy's name is Kirk Smallwood, and he's from Britain. And the guy just kind of has these very interesting tidbits and facts. And that's what his, he has one, and they're very obscure. And he, one, they're very short episodes. They're like the 10, 12 minute, you know, algorithm type of a YouTube show. Mm-hmm. They're very watchable. But he did one on Wayne Gretzky.
Mm.
Was the most booed man in hockey in Canada when he was a child.
Oh.
And that it is absolutely mind-blowing. When you think about mental toughness, and these are all things, these aren't things he's making up. These are actual, he does a ton of research on this.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out that when Gretzky was a very, very young man, 6, 7 years, like very young, he was that good that he played with 14 and 15-year-olds.
Oh.
And he was better than them.
Oh, wow.
So this dude was like immediately the great one.
Right.
And so because he was stealing time from these other players, the parents hated him.
Oh, man.
He wound up having to go far away and travel. True story.
Far, far away.
As a young boy. I feel like I'm giving like this as a young man.
Why don't we just tweet out the link so people can watch it?
Well, the
story time with Dory.
But it's real quick, but the parents of these teams used to follow him and boo him in these other cities. And you think about the incredible, I mean, his stats are just, they're not going to ever. They're impossible to be broken. Every one of his records is, it's impossible.
Okay.
Okay. And when you think about that, every single thing, the way he always carried himself, I thought with a lot of class and dignity.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And just the toughness that it took.
Yeah, to be that young and being booed.
And that good. And having adults bully you.
They probably helped him, though. It builds his mental toughness. It builds his, he carries himself.
We talk so much about, oh boy, people are going to hate me on this one.
Oh boy.
About Steve Stamkos and how poised he is and always has been. At 18 years old, he was this kid that was just, you know, and I just feel like, you guys should check it out. It's Fact Fiend, and the guy's name is Kirk Smallwood, and it's awesome.
Can we tweet it out?
I guess I can find it.
Find the link and tweet it out.
Okay, I will.
Okay. One other thing that I read over the summer that I wanted to share with everybody in case you did not see it, Robin Lehner. He is now the Islanders goaltender. He wrote a story for The Athletic about his substance abuse issues and dealing with mental health, and it's a fascinating read.
Yeah.
It really kind of gives you a little peek behind the curtain of what these guys are dealing with, because you think, oh, these are tip-top shape athletes and they've got everything they could ever want in the world. Not really.
Yeah.
So definitely worth a read. I did tweet it out over the summer. I'll try to remember to tweet it out again so you can take a read. It's a real short read, but it's really fascinating. So
well, there you go.
Yeah.
Media catch up.
That was our summer reading list and summer watching list, everybody. So that's it. We're on for an hour now this season.
Sorry
about you. But we promise it's going to be entertaining. We're going to have so much fun. Don't forget to follow us on all social media platforms at Game Miz with a Z Conduct. It's been a while since I've gotten to say that. I've missed it. I've missed you guys. So follow us on there. Hit us up on Twitter. Let us know what you're thinking about the season. And kicking off the season October 6th at Amalie Arena.
Saturday.
So excited. We'll see you at Amalie Arena and catch you next week.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.